Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to help you win at work and succeed at life. My name is Michelle Cachat. I'm your co-host. And today joining me in the conversation is Michael Hyatt. Hey there, Michael.
Hey, Michelle. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. As usual, having these conversations with you, it's one of the highlights of my week. I actually really enjoy it. I learned so much.
Yeah, me too. I was really looking forward to today's especially. This is a great topic.
Yeah, today we're talking about habits, and most of us realize or recognize that good habits lead to good outcomes, ideally, and bad habits lead to bad ones. We know this. We teach it to our children. We talk about it with our peers. It's, you know, basically common sense. However, if it is that simple, then why do we find habits so hard to change? For example, why is it hard to stop sleeping in and actually get up and have a productive routine in the morning? And why is it hard to eat right and to exercise and maintain that kind of habit or routine? And why is it so hard to be committed to thinking positively and avoiding letting negative thoughts sneak in? So if those things are so hard for us, and if developing new habits is theoretically fairly simple, why is this so difficult? And please, please tell me I'm not the only one that struggles with this.
You're definitely not the only one. I think sometimes the smallest habits can be really difficult to acquire. And I think sometimes it's because we're just not sufficiently motivated, or we don't see the linkage between that habit and the life that we want to create or the ultimate outcome. You know, a habit in and of itself is not that virtuous. You know, it's only valuable if it leads to an outcome that we want to achieve. Otherwise, it might just be OCD behavior.
Mm-hmm. But not that I know anything about that.
But I was, you know, I did think I would start with a true confession today. And that is that until about 15 years ago, I didn't floss. Now that's shocking. And I don't want to see anybody posting that on social media, but it was kind of embarrassing because I'd had a really negative experience with a dentist. And I wouldn't go back to the dentist, and I didn't feel like I could go back until I started flossing, because I'd really been chided by the dentist the last time I had gone. And so I just decided I wasn't going to go. But Gail was such a flosser, and she just started nagging me and just saying, look, you know, this is a matter of, do you want to keep your teeth or not? I mean, just like fast forward this and see where you're going to be in about 20 years, and you're not going to have any teeth. So you really only have to floss the teeth that you want to keep. And so finally, I did go to the dentist. I made an appointment, and I went, and my worst fears were confirmed. I had gum disease, and they had to do a lot of remedial work to get my teeth back up to snuff, and I had to do a lot of remedial work. But one of the things that happened in that office was that the dentist showed me some pictures of what my mouth would look like if I didn't start flossing, what it was going to look like in 20 years.
And that's, it was a little shocking, actually. That probably was traumatic.
It was horrifying. I was absolutely, utterly horrified by it. And I thought, man, that is not the future that I want. And so I started flossing. Now, fast forward now, 15 years later, I haven't missed a day flossing since I can't remember when. I will drag in late at night, totally exhausted, can't see straight, you know, just so tired. My eyes are glazed over, but I will floss. I just have to do that now before I go to bed. And so, you know, that's served me well, but that one little change made a huge difference. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the reality for a lot of us, is that we struggle to get these basic habits into place. And change just isn't easy. I mean, I think that's the short answer. But
no.
Anyway, I was reading Tony Schwartz's book recently. I don't know if you're familiar with his work. He used to have a book. It was called The Way We're Working Isn't Working. It's been retitled now and repackaged. Publishers do that. And it's now called Be Excellent at Anything. But get a load of some of this. I quote some of this in Best Year Ever, but he says 95% of those who lose weight on a diet regain it, and a significant percentage gain back more than they originally lost. And then he says, beyond that, he says, even after a heart attack, this is really surprising, one of every seven patients makes any enduring changes around eating or exercising.
Mm-hmm. That really is shocking.
It is. And then 25% of people abandon their New Year's resolutions after 1 week. That didn't surprise me because I've done a lot of work on that. Mm-hmm. Then 60% do so within 6 months. The average person makes the same New Year's resolution 10 separate times without success. But as it turns...
Oh, that's painful.
Isn't that crazy? But I really do think, Michelle, that the secret to change is acquiring new habits. And if we can learn to master this, we really can change the direction of our lives and really create the kind of life we want. It's not in the massive action that we take that changes the course of our life, but it's kind of that old adage that, you know, small hinges swing big doors. And mm-hmm. in this case, small habits can have a big impact on our lives.
So you mentioned that Gail was a big piece of the impetus for you deciding to floss, yep. which, but the rest of us don't have Gail. I don't think she wants to be our habit breaking coach, but our habit developing coach. So in the absence of that, today you're going to give us several different strategies for building a new habit, correct?
Yes, I am.
And basically, for all of you who are listening, think of a habit that you either want to break or a new habit you want to create, which are often the same thing. You break one to create a new one. And as we go through this, it doesn't necessarily have to be a big thing, whatever it is. Then really think of it real time in terms of your particular experience, because that's where the real life change happens. In short, what we're going to talk about today is being intentional. Habits don't change on their own. You'll just slip back into the same pattern if you aren't intentional about changing. So let's get started. There are five simple strategies for building a new habit, which will ultimately help you to become better every single day. What's that first strategy, Michael?
Yeah, the first strategy, and I start here with life planning. I start here with goal setting, and I start here with building new habits, and it's to envision the future. So it really helps if we can fast forward to a destination. In other words, if I don't change, where am I going to be in 5 years? If I do change, conversely, where am I going to be? So as I said earlier, my dentist literally used pictures to demonstrate for me two alternative futures. And that really did the trick because when I saw my mouth, you know, 20 years from now or 10 years from now with serious gum disease and no teeth, you know, wasn't very attractive. But on the
Which
other
hand, it would be a whole different feel on the podcast if you had no teeth. I just want to point out.
Yeah, I'd be gumming it. But on the other
hand, something more than a pop filter, my friend. You would need a lot more help.
Gum filter. But on the other hand, you know, here's what a healthy mouth looks like. And the thing he said to me was, he said, look, if you will just invest 5 minutes a day flossing, you can avoid all this pain, mm-hmm. all this ugliness. And have great teeth. You don't have to lose your teeth. You know, they used to before they knew the importance of flossing, but you don't have to lose your teeth. And you can do great with just 5 minutes a day. And here was a cool thing. It didn't even take 5 minutes a day. You know, it takes me about 2 minutes a day to do it. I mean, it's no time at all. But the same thing is true if you're trying to get in shape. So, for example, you could visualize what you're going to look like when you have a body that's strong and healthy. Or you can think, you know, if I can continue on my same trajectory, gaining 5 pounds a year over 20 years, you know, that's like another person. Or,
yeah, exactly.
Or if you think about your marriage, you know, if you want to have a better marriage, what would that look like in 5 years if you could build some habits and begin to incrementally improve your marriage? Same thing with your career, same thing with your finances. So it really begins by envisioning the future.
Now, does it matter if you, when it comes to having that vision of the future, does it matter versus establishing a negative vision versus a positive? Does it help to have a little bit of both so you have the contrast?
I actually like it both ways. So I like to kind of fast forward the tape negatively and positively. Don Miller has this whole thing he does in his Story Brand workshop, and it's his 7-part story framework. And one of the parts in that is you visualize part 6 and 7, the negative ending or the tragic ending or the comedic or the happy ending. And mm-hmm. so I think it's good because the negative sometimes will motivate you because you go, gosh, you know, for this little incremental investment, I don't want to end up in the ditch with this negative result. But then conversely, I find myself personally more motivated by the positive, what it is that I'm trying to build and the outcome I'm trying to create.
Yeah, really, the contrast between the two is what's so powerful. So that first strategy, again, is to envision the future. What's next?
The second one is to track your progress. And I have to tell you, I'm one of those people that I love to see progress. In fact, it's really my theme for this year. And I say to my team here at the office every day, I'll say, okay, guys, this week we're making what? Progress. Yes, because we love progress. So I'm one of those kinds of people, and my guess is you're kind of like this too, but I love to check things off my to-do list. In fact, I've been known, okay, this is another confession, to put things on.
Oh, now we have two major confessions today. I don't know if I could handle more than the flossing, but go for it.
I will occasionally put something on my to-do list that I've already completed just so I can check it off. Like anybody cares.
I do it every single day. Every day. I feel so good about it when I do it.
It's like you get points or something. But that's just how I'm wired. I'm very achievement oriented. It's my top strength. But I also like to see numeric improvement. And one of the things I love about my dentist is that when I go in, he always measures the space between my teeth and my gums, and he gives me an overall score. And I always like to see what the score was last time, and did I move the needle? Did I move up or down?
Only you would turn a dentist appointment into a numerical chart.
Look, you got to gamify it.
Well, and I agree. It's the same thing. It's like I've been really working to get healthy again, get active again after a year of not being very active. And ironically enough, a silly Fitbit is what's done it for me because it's very numerical. So every day I'm trying to increase my steps and my miles and my calories burned, all of that. But I'm very driven by that number as well. So, and tracking my progress makes me motivated to keep going.
Have you seen that steadily improve over this last year as you've
Yeah, significantly. If you would look at my Fitbit chart or even on my iPhone, the iHeart chart, you can see it change significantly.
Yeah, so I like to track all that kind of stuff. You know, I track whether or not I read the Bible, whether I journaled, whether I got to the gym. You know, it's just certain habits that I track because I know that if I do those consistently, it takes a lot of pain out of life. You know, we get into a lot of pain and we have a lot of disastrous consequences because we give up certain habits that we know better on. And here's the thing about it, Michelle, is that initially we don't experience the consequence. You know, like if I were to miss flossing for a day, nobody would know. My teeth would be fine. But, you know, if that stretches for a week, probably not a big deal either. But it's accumulation of those things after a while where you slip back into the bad habit. And that's what I really fear, is losing the habit altogether. It's why I go to the gym all the time. So
yeah, it's amazing. It only takes a couple of weeks of not doing it for you to lose the routine.
Yeah, exactly. And so I just want to say, one of the ways that I track now, the cool thing is there's a lot of little applications out there that you can get to track this kind of stuff. The App Store is full of them. I'm sure the Google Play Store for Android is full of them too. But one of them that I'm using this year is one called Way of Life. And I'm using it to track habits. It's super simple. And that's why I like it. And it shows your progress. You can skip days if you have to. And it doesn't count against you if you got a legitimate reason. But I mean, you basically make up the rules and then you follow them.
Well, and what I love about what you just said is you don't need an elaborate tool to track your progress. It's really more about simplicity. The point is to keep track. If you get caught up in the method, you lose your motivation for the actual habit development itself. And so it's not really the method. Yeah. It's the fact that you use something.
Yes. And it can be as simple as making a notation in a journal. I used to make notations about my exercise in my Google Calendar, but don't get hung up on the tool. And I know people spend an inordinate amount of time trying to find the perfect tool. No tool will work if you don't use it. And just about any tool will work if you use it. So something is better than nothing.
Absolutely, without a doubt. All right. So the first strategy, envision the future. Second strategy, track your progress. What is the third strategy, Michael?
Yeah, the third one, and I'm going to use the R word. And for many people, this is a bad word, but for me, it's not. But it's develop a ritual. Some people think of rituals as something negative, but they don't have to be. They can be positive. Here's the deal. A ritual is anything you do regularly that you invest with meaning. It only becomes a empty or a dead ritual if you don't invest it with meaning, if you're just going through the motions. But if you know why you're doing it and the significance of it, then it could be very meaningful of that. And most people think of it as in a religious context, and that's really not how I'm using it here. So, for example,
would you give that definition one more time? Because I think that bears repeating, especially since we have such a hard time gripping this idea that a ritual is valuable.
Yeah, okay. So a ritual is anything you do regularly that you invest with meaning. Now, you know, the truth is rituals are inescapable. You know, even people that claim to have no rituals have a ritual of having no rituals.
Okay, excellent point.
So, you know, they make a big fuss about it. And yet, if you watch, there are certain patterns in their life that recur because that's just how we're made.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We are made, even those of us who don't feel very routined or ritualistic, we are just made to almost develop and operate in patterns, you know, to follow the same kind of routine ritual. We just are.
Yeah, the question is not whether you're going to have rituals. The question is whether they're going to be helpful or hurtful, because there's negative rituals too. But we've talked about on this show before, I have a morning ritual that I go through, and I'm very committed to that morning ritual because it sets me up for my most productive day. And I also have an evening ritual, which I've blogged about. I don't think we've done a podcast on it. I can't remember. But some kind of ritual will help you get started in the day. And what it means is to become thoughtful and intentional about it. So, for example, with flossing, since we're using that example, you know, that's just about the last thing I do every night before I go to bed. And I've got a whole, you know, dental hygiene ritual that I go through at the end of night. I've ritualized it. I've systematized it, if you will, so I don't miss. And I'm always faithful. And I always take my stuff wherever I go. So I never, never miss that ritual. And, you know, flossing in the big scheme of things is not that big a deal. But you can ritualize a lot of stuff. Like, for example, when I was leading my mentoring group, I learned from my friend Reggie Campbell about this exercise called 5 for 5, or 5 for 5. And it meant when you walk in the door after work, that you go stand 5 feet from your spouse and you spend 5 minutes asking them how their day was. Okay, so this is a ritual. It's a small habit, but over time, it communicates empathy, caring, other-centeredness. You're building into the relationship with your spouse. Mm-hmm. So I love that.
That's a great habit.
That might be on my list
of new habits. I really like that.
5 for 5. There you go. Thank you, Reggie. All right.
Thanks, Reggie. I don't know Reggie, but thank you, Reggie. All right. So far we've talked about 3 strategies to build a new habit, the goal being to help you become better every day and develop the kind of intentional living that you want. So far we've talked about the first strategy, envision the future. Second, track your progress. And third, develop a ritual. We have 2 more to talk about before we dig into those last 2 strategies. Michael, you mentioned an opportunity that you wanted to share with everybody. What is it?
What was I going to share today? I forgot.
It has something to do with a beautiful new book that you have. And the self-assessment test, perhaps?
Yes. I hope you have the link for that because I don't have it in front of me. But we do have in the book, Living Forward, which I'm holding in my hands here, there is a wonderful self-assessment tool. And I love, as you know, Michelle, I love self-assessments. I don't care if it's Myers-Briggs, StrengthFinders, Colby.
I just did one last week.
By the way, have you ever done the Enneagram?
No, I haven't. Although I've heard you and Megan talking about it. And so I want to do that one.
But yeah, you got
to
do that one. We're crazy about that one right now. But we have a new assessment in Living Forward, and it's called the Life Profile Assessment. And it basically grades you on a couple different things about how much passion you have about a specific area of your life, like your marriage or your career or your spiritual life. And it also grades you on your progress. And as it turns out, if you have both passion and progress, that's when you're in the most healthy state. And that's what you want to aim for. But it grades you and it gives you a little assessment so that when it comes to building your life plan, which is what the book Living Forward is all about, how to build a life plan, it'll help you focus on those areas where, you know, maybe you're lacking the passion or maybe you're lacking a sense of progress. And so if you can diagnose that, you can figure out which areas to focus on first. So I'm wondering if somebody...
Well, and it's very fitting with our topic today, talking about habits, because we just got done talking about tracking progress, and this is slightly different, but the idea is not to be random and reactive to your life, but being more intentional about it. And these self-assessments, including the book Living Forward and this whole idea of life plan, is so key to living intentionally that way.
Yes, and I think you can find that assessment actually at livingforwardbook.com, which will tell you all about the book, and there's some additional goodies there, some resources that we mentioned in the book, but that's where you'll find the life profile assessment as well.
All right, so just to recap for those of you who are listening, and first of all, make sure you get your copy of Living Forward if you haven't yet. It's I've read it, and without a doubt, it's one of the easiest books to read and put into practice with profound and significant results. I mean, if you can get something that is easy to apply and create that kind of change in your life, you don't want to miss the opportunity to take advantage of that. And today, Michael is telling you about the free life profile assessment that you can get. It's free, it's for you, and you have access to that at livingforwardbook.com. Livingforwardbook.com. Make sure you don't miss it. All right, so today we're talking about how to build new habits. And you've given us a very good example in your own life about learning the habit of daily flossing, which, you know, is a relatively minor a habit to develop, and yet it can have significant implications depending on what you do with that. And the same could be said for all of our habits as well. They may seem very small right now, but cumulative over time, some of those habits can be very detrimental if we don't establish a good habit. And so you're walking us through the strategies of making that happen. It begins with first envisioning the future. So get some kind of vision of both the negative consequences of not changing your habit, and then the positive consequences of changing your habit, and compare those. Second, track your progress. And then third, develop a ritual. What is the fourth strategy for building a new habit?
The fourth one is establish accountability. Now, I've done that by hiring a trainer when I'm working out or trying to get into shape. Gail was my accountability partner with flossing. And by the way, that doesn't always work with the spouse. So I've had other accountability partners for other habits I'm trying to build. You know, it might just be a friend, could be somebody in your family. They might be somebody you hire, somebody who's going to hold you accountable. But the key is the best way I found is to find somebody who is willing to do it with you. And I remember when I first started running back in college, I had a friend that would meet me out on the curb every morning, and we lived close to one another so we could do this. But we'd meet on the curb every morning at 5 a.m., and then we'd run. And the very fact that I knew that David was going to be on the curb waiting for me, I didn't want to let him down. So it got me out of bed when I didn't feel like it, just because the buddy system, I didn't want to let him down, and we were doing it together. And the same thing worked for him. It just gave me a great sense of accountability. Also, when I was in college, another place I did this was I had a friend, Mark DeVries, who happens to be a pastor now here in Nashville. But we used to study Greek together. And, you know, neither one of us were really that motivated on our own.
I didn't know you studied Greek.
Yeah, actually 5 semesters of it. And
Wow. So
we created this accountability system where we would call each other early in the morning and say, hey, just want to make sure you're up studying your Greek. And, you know, sometimes I needed it, sometimes he needed it, but it got us consistent and helped us make progress through that, for us, both of us, a very difficult subject. So what I don't want in accountability, and I don't know about you, Michelle, but I don't want somebody that's going to act like a surrogate parent, somebody who just, you know, nags me incessantly and drives me crazy. What I want is somebody, and the reason I don't want that, by the way, is because it makes me want to rebel. But I want somebody that is going to be an encouragement and somebody that's just going to gently check in with me and give me the kind of leverage I need to get moving in the right direction. So accountability, establishing accountability, I think is a key strategy for building habits. I don't know how you do it without it.
Well, I agree. I actually have someone that we hold each other accountable to get up and write in the morning before our families get up. And she doesn't even live in the same state as me. We text each other at about 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning to say, I'm up, I'm writing. And it's not so much what I say to her or what she says to me. We just know the other person's going to be waiting for us. And so that alone is enough to get up and do it.
You know, that's one I've never tried, is to do have an accountability partner for writing. But I can see where that would be hugely helpful. Yeah, great idea.
It was huge. We both made commitments for how many words we were going to write a day, especially when we were on deadline. And so we let each other know this is our word count. So we'd text the moment we wake up and say, hey, I'm up, I'm writing. And then we would text once we hit our number.
That's great.
And so some days, you know, it took 45 minutes to write 500 words. Other days it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon when I was texting her saying, finally, I got my 500 words done. But the point was she was waiting and I knew she was waiting. And it's not like she nagged me or anything. We just both knew each other was doing the same thing. So we held each other accountable.
Is that still your goal? 500 words a day?
Well, right now on deadline, I have a book due in 6 days, not that I'm counting. So right now it's probably more like 50 bajillion words a day.
What's the most words you've ever written in a day?
10,000.
No way.
Way. I just did that last week.
That's impressive. When I was writing Living Forward, the best day I had was 3,000 words. And of course, I was just going to say, when I try to project, because I map all this stuff out, you know, how many words I have to write a day to get it done, and I wrote it in 30 days. And that's all I had was 30 days. But some days were 3,000 words. And then I think, oh, man, I'm going to finish 12 days early. But of course, then the next day, it's like 250 words.
That never happens. You know, if you have one day where it's going really well, you just have to squeeze it out as much as you can because you know it's not going to repeat tomorrow. But I find that once I get in my mode, once I get into kind of my writing mode, as long as I have a big chunk of time, that's when I can produce a lot of words. But the hard thing is the starting and stopping. But it's truly back to today's topic. It's the accountability for me that makes the difference. So there's too many distractions in my life to maintain a good habit because I can easily get pulled away into other tasks. So that accountability makes the world of difference.
That's good. Love it.
All right. So that fourth strategy, again, is to establish some kind of accountability. This isn't about adopting another parent or prison guard or somebody that's going to beat you upside the head when you don't do it. But it's more about having this kind of teamwork relationship where you're both doing it together. And then what is that fifth and final strategy to building a new habit?
Yeah, the fifth one is to schedule checkups. So I had my assistant, for example, schedule regular dental appointments because left to my own devices, it just wouldn't happen. I'd never get to it. I'd procrastinate. But the fact that it continues to appear on my calendar at regular intervals, you know, I continue to move in the direction I want to move because I don't want to show up and be embarrassed with the dentist again. So by scheduling the regular checkup, I make sure that I'm taking care of my teeth because I know I got that checkup coming. And it also provides another layer of accountability. So I do the same thing with my annual physical. You know, I schedule that every single year. I know I'm going to have blood work done. I know they're going to check the cholesterol. I know they're going to check all my vitamin levels and all that stuff. And so if I'm not taking my supplements, if I'm not working out, if I'm not eating nutritious food, that's going to show up in my physical, especially it's going to show up in my blood work. So I want a good report. You know, so I schedule the checkup and it keeps me focused on producing the results. So this is really a way to, you know, defeat bad habits, to build new ones. And that's where I think it's necessary to focus our energy if we're going to really make these little changes create big outcomes for us.
Let's talk about that real quick with the scheduling a checkup, because let's imagine that somebody wants to develop a running habit or an exercising habit. And doctor's appointments may be one kind of checkup, but could maybe signing up for a 5K or having some kind of deadline in place, can that function like a checkup?
Absolutely. You know, I used to do that with running. Back when I started running 10Ks and half marathons, man, nothing lit a fire under me more than knowing that that deadline was looming and that if I didn't prepare, I was going to be huffing and puffing out there and might not finish. So yeah, for years I did that. I haven't run a half marathon in a couple of years, but I did that initially as a way of doing that exact same thing. Even now, I don't know that this is as a checkup, but I do work out with a trainer. Maybe that's just accountability, but I know that he's going to be there 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And if I don't show up, my deal is I have to pay him anyway. So I'm highly motivated to get it.
Yeah. Money seems to be a little bit of a motivator at times. I like that.
We, you know, it's funny because in my Inner Circle mastermind group, the guy started using this application. I can't remember the name of it right now, but it basically was you would all commit to a habit. And then if you didn't do it, you pledged something on the front end that you were going to give up, like a monetary thing, how much you were going to spend and where you were going to pay it. So all the guys were giving to a charity. And if they kept the regimen, if they did the habit as mm-hmm. many times a week as they pledged to do, then they didn't have to pay it. But if mm-hmm. they didn't, they had to pay it. So it was pretty a cool little thing.
Wow. That's intense. I like it though.
Yeah.
I tend to be more motivated when there's something at stake like that. That just drives me a little bit harder. So that's good.
Well, you got to have skin in the game. And I think that's why mm-hmm. that very first strategy we were talking about in terms of envisioning the future is so important. Because usually we lose sight of what's at stake. You know, like in our marriage, we think, okay, like if I just have a, you know, if I speak rudely to Gail, you know, it's not that big a deal. I mean, I've had a bad day, whatever.
Whatever, yeah.
But what we don't see is that when we begin to build a pattern of that, or I speak ill of her in public, or I don't take time to ask her about her day, you know, over time, those little habits or the lack thereof will create a bad marriage, a bad relationship. Mm-hmm. And we lose sight of that, but that's where it all goes. And that's why I think, you know, we've got to stay mindful of the ultimate outcome that we want.
Yeah, I'm thinking right now in terms of parenting, in terms of friendships, in terms of peer relationships in your job, your employee relationships, employer relationships. I mean, this whole idea of being intentional about our habits could be potentially very powerful, because I don't think we fully realize how many negative habits we've slipped into inadvertently.
Yeah, it's almost like sowing seed. Mm-hmm. You know, those things are going to come up. They're either going to come up as, you know, some beautiful plant, or they're going to come up as a weed. And we get the choice about what habits we sow into our lives. Nobody forces us to sow a bad habit or a good habit. We get to choose on that. We have agency in that. And so it's important that we choose well and we build our lives around the right kind of habits that lead to a positive, healthy lifestyle.
Well, once again today, we've been talking about 5 strategies for building new habits, how to become better every day. And Michael, you've given us 5 very simple strategies. I love them because they're so easy to put into practice. The first is to envision the future. The second strategy, track your progress. Third, develop a ritual. 4, establish accountability. And 5, schedule checkups. Now, you talked about your flossing habit and you've conquered that, and you for years now have been very faithful at flossing. But before we leave, I have to ask you, is there any habit you're trying to develop right now?
Yeah, I just saw a question pop up in the chat box about what habits have I put in place to build essentialism into my life. So one of the things that I've learned from Greg McKeown's book, Essentialism, is the importance of saying no, or at least the importance of recognizing that you can't say yes without a trade-off. If you're going to say yes to a new invitation, a new activity, you've got to say no to something else. My problem is, as a recovering people pleaser, left to my own devices, I'll say yes to everything. People ask me to do stuff and I want to be helpful, so I say yes. So one of the habits that I've put into place, and I'm struggling with it a little bit, but I'm getting better at it, and that is, I don't say yes to any invitations anymore. I always route those through Susie, my assistant, because she's got a little bit more distance. She has the context of my overall calendar. And, you know, it's easier for her to say no than me. So I'm just trying to develop that discipline. Greg talks about this in the book, too, of just pushing the pause and letting somebody else make the request to her rather than to me.
Great. And how you feel like you're progressing pretty good in that habit?
Yeah, I do. You know, it's tough. And the hard thing is I sometimes forget, because if somebody just walks up to me and asks me, it's hard for me to just say, I can't say yes. You know, because I want to say yes. And so it's hard.
Same, I get you.
You know, it's kind of like, sometimes it's embarrassing. Like, dude, don't you have control over your own calendar? Well, the truth is no, because when I try to, I make a mess of it. And so that's why I let Susie manage it. So, because here's the thing I want, Michelle. I want margin in my life so that I can stay committed to the things that matter most. And there's a lot of these little things that, again, out of context, seem like small requests. But if you're not careful, those things can fill up your calendar. And then you start canceling things, in my case, like going to visit my parents, whom I need to see, or spending time with my grandchildren, which I want to do, because I've got an appointment with somebody that I hardly even know, trying to be helpful, but it's ultimately not helpful to my prior commitments. It's not helpful to me, and it's not helpful in terms of my purpose of why I exist.
Well, that's excellent. And I love that particular habit because it's something that I need to develop as well. But thanks for being so authentic about sharing something you're in progress with right now. It helps the rest of us who feel a little bit in progress with our habits too. Well, if you have enjoyed today's episode, you can get the show notes and the full transcript at michaelhyatt.com. If you prefer to watch, then join us every Monday afternoon for a live video recording of our Blab podcast session. You can find that at blab.im. Now, can you do us a favor today before you go? Please head on over to iTunes. I promise it will only take about 30 seconds, but it really helps us when you rate our program, give us some feedback, let other people know about the content that you're receiving here. It's the best way for us to get this material into the hands of people who need it most. Before we go, do you have any final thoughts today, Michael?
Yeah, I would just caution people about trying to inculcate too many habits at one time. So I would say pick one habit, maybe the most two, and focus on those. And one of the things that we've learned from psychology in the last couple of years, there used to be sort of this street wisdom that said, if you do something for 21 days, it's a habit. And it turns out it's more like 66 days to do it. Mm-hmm. So pick one or two habits and stick with it for a couple of months before you try another one. That way you get mastery, you won't get discouraged, and you won't want to give up.
That's great advice, Michael. Thank you. And thank you, listener, for joining us today. Until next time, remember, your life, your one and only life, is a gift. Now go make it count.